Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to episode 47 of the Comic Pod in association with Anfield Index. I keep wanting to say in association with a sponsored partner. I don't know why. I was thinking it'd be great one day if we just comes out with some giant sponsorship deal that me and Stu are making loads of money off, but it's not happened yet. Tonight it is just me and Stu. How are you doing, mate?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm not going to introduce myself anymore, I don't think. I think people know us by now if they listen to this pod. I would hope so, anyway.
Yeah, I would be disappointed if they didn't.
Yeah, we're 47 in, you know. It's how long have we been going now? Is it 18 months?
Oh, yeah, well over 18 months.
Jesus. That's quite impressive,
actually. That's practically long-running.
Yeah, I'd say we're long-running. We're a long-running established podcast.
We're still shit, but we're long running and established.
Yeah, well, yeah, we.
It's all about quantity, not quality.
I'd say it's all about quantity. Yeah, and we've had some excellent quantity in our time, you know,
and some terrible quality.
Yeah, but we've had the odd one. I still fondly remember that
we've had Logan.
The Logan. We both go, what's the best podcast you've done? Well, there was this one. No, there was just Logan.
Logan. And then a whole lot of filler. And long may continue.
Yeah, filler and crude jokes and swear words.
And me saying the C-bomb.
And me not remembering any actors' names. That seems to happen an awful lot. For a man that knows, I think I know a lot of stuff, I seem to forget every significant actor's name in films, which is, or TV, which is pretty terrible.
Well, at least on this one, we've got a big cast to talk about.
We have got a big cast, so I'd better open IMDb and be prepared for once. We're hitting quite early on this, I'd say. This is probably the quickest reaction we've done to a series or film. We are talking about Netflix's biggest Marvel production to date. I say maybe it's not quite. It feels like it is.
Budget-wise and cast-wise, it's head and shoulders above everything else.
Yeah, I think it's... we're talking about Defenders, obviously, if you didn't get the grasp of that or didn't look at the picture or the description. we're talking about Defenders this week. It's going to be huge for them in terms of the, I think in the short scheme and long scheme of things for Netflix, because it was the coming together of all the four major characters that we've all been waiting a long time for, I think.
And they've been working towards it for, is it two years now?
Two years. Do you know what's quite interesting actually about this, which I only discovered today, and this is kind of off topic, well it's not, but Iron Fist was shot after Defenders.
What?
Yeah. So I discovered that the Defenders was shot first and Iron Fist was shot or finished second, which is interesting because I think we'll talk about Danny Rand in a bit.
That's really strange.
Yeah, I heard that was, I can't remember which podcast I was listening to, but it was discussed at length. And I think what they realise is that because they committed to the character in this story, in this style, there was no chance to maybe correct anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It might be that, or maybe it was, I think it was either that way round, or they'd finished shooting the Defenders when Iron Fist was already released. I can't remember. There's something that essentially means that the reaction from Iron Fist couldn't then be adjusted for the Defenders. Do you know what I mean? They had no time to then go back and go,
right.
Yeah, do you know what was good or what was bad about Iron Fist? And they basically couldn't do reshoots and change any narrative because I think you noticed with, I don't know, Jessica Jones felt like Jessica Jones. I suppose Luke Cage did the same, but Daredevil was definitely evolved. Do you know what I mean?
In series one, he was.
And I think we'll see a lot more of that.
He's the only one that's had a substantial period of time, isn't he? Everyone else, it was quite recent, whereas it was a good 6 months after the events of Daredevil season two. So he's the only one that's really had time to go away and sort of think about and stew on what's happened. Everyone else was quite fresh. And they're all different, aren't they? Like Luke Cage isn't one to stew in his own juices. I mean, he's had the hardest hand because he's ended up back in fucking prison for something he didn't do. But he's just come out clean slate, water off a duck's back. Well, what's happened.
It was brief as well. Do you know what I mean? I was glad coming into this, actually, that it felt like the first episode or two, there was obviously some development there and some kind of interaction and trying to get the characters, in tune with each other where possible and developing their individual and collective storylines. But it didn't feel like it was too long based on that. Do you know what I mean? It, sometimes with these series, it feels like the build-up to anything actually happening, a little bit with Luke Cage at times.
Especially with only eight episodes. Because if you think proportionately, if they'd spent half an episode or one episode dealing with, you know, Luke getting out of prison and him talking about this is what happened, proportionately you've just lost a huge portion of the whole series on a really inconsequential part of one character, and it wouldn't have worked. There's too many strings that all needed time.
There's too much to get on with. Do you know what I mean? It would
be different if this was earlier on, but because we've had two seasons of Daredevil and one of everyone else, we know the characters, we know the supporting characters, we know Claire intimately now because she's the fabric that holds them all together, she's the big link character between them. So they didn't need to sit around and go, oh, Luke Cage has been in prison and this is what he's been doing. We know Luke, we know Claire, we know all of the other ones, so literally just get in there, get on with it and get building.
I think we spoke around the time
that it felt like they almost split it into two halves. They went, right, first four episodes, building the team, building the people, building the relationship.
It did feel like a massive split, actually.
Second four, let's just fight some undead ninjas. Just, you know, get through it.
It felt, in fairness, quite Daredevil. I think what everyone's expecting or hoping for is maybe a slight move away from the hand and moving on to other areas, do you know what I mean? Because it did feel quite familiar, which it was always going to, but it did feel like a little bit of an extension of a Daredevil series.
I think it did, because it was, wasn't it? It was just an extension. It was a logical continuation of what they'd done. And I must admit, as far as first villains go, I think the hand was a bit of a soft one to choose. I think they could have done a lot better. They could have done
I think so too. I think that the best villain they've had in the entirety of all the series, I don't know, you can make an argument for Punisher, obviously, and you can make an argument for David Tennant's character, Kilgrave. Yeah. But I still think, going back to Daredevil series one, I think you go back to Fisk, and I just think he was just more of the presence, and he was more unhinged. I mean, saying more unhinged than the Punisher is quite a big thing, but the Punisher still had some level of humanity. He wasn't just out to cause. destruction in the way that I think Fisk was psychologically and mentally ready to do. Do you know what I mean? So I think that was somewhat lacking. And I think Sigourney Weaver, I thought, was really good casting.
Yeah, she
played a role well. She played a role well to an extent she got to play the role. I thought she could have. I thought they were going to go up a bit of a notch with her, and her get a little bit more. I don't know. She was very clean cut, wasn't she? Do you know what I mean? She wasn't tyrannical or losing her marbles or anything. She was very straight.
She was towards the end, but that's kind of understandable because she was dying and.
Yeah,
that she'd lived. Well, we don't know how long she'd lived, but we know she'd had a very long life. There were some really subtle references that I think a lot of people might have missed, like when she talked about Constantinople. People probably don't realise how old that reference is. You know, that's hundreds and hundreds of years old. So for her to be saying that, it's their way of saying, isn't it? Oh, look, she's 500 years old without actually coming out and being really obvious and saying it. And they did that a few times with other things where when she was talking about composers, like she was talking about Beethoven or something, and she's like, oh, well, such and such a body was like this. And she was talking about a rivalry between two composers. And again, you're thinking, shit, did she actually knew them? And that woman at the museum or wherever it is going, oh, your insight is so fabulous. And she's just got this smirk on her face without actually saying to her, well, yeah, I did actually know them, and they were both, you know, like this, that and the other. So she was brilliant. But it's what you'd expect, and it's what we always say in all these situations. It's getting that right balance of the young people that you've maybe never heard of, like Charlie Cox, I'd never heard of. I didn't know anything really of Deborah Ann Woll, although she had a good run on True Blood. And then you go and get Sigourney Weaver, you know, and David Tennant, people who you see and go, shit, there's some real quality in this.
Yeah, no, there really is. I mean, it's got that kind of, we talked about it with other Marvel productions in terms of film, but it's bringing people in with that kind of gravitas and stuff. And Sigourney Weaver, I mean, has it in...
Oh, in troves.
Yeah, exactly.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, she is. And she just... She's got that presence about her, and there's not many. I mean, every time we reel off these films, it feels like there are a lot, but there aren't many kind of actors or actresses or actors, if we're being PC, that have that kind of on-screen presence like she does. So you know, we talked about Douglas, talked about her. There's obviously people like Kevin Spacey, and you know, but there's certain people that just, if they're on screen, they're very hard to take their eyes, you know, take your eyes off them. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I think she's got that because, you know, she's always done roles which kind of stand out, in Aliens in particular.
Oh, well, if you look at what Aliens was, it was groundbreaking.
Yeah.
To have a woman in a leading role in that kind of, in a really macho role as well.
Oh, yeah. She kicked ass in that.
And she's been brilliant, but... Alexandra was such a varied character, wasn't she? When you think the first time we see her, she's vulnerable, she's frail, she's terrified because she's all of a sudden, she's essentially mortal. But then as the show goes on, she becomes even more, she just gets worse and worse and more evil and more scheming. And like
she does have that about her. She's obviously trying to save her life, essentially, isn't she? Do you know what I mean? She's trying to find a way, I think, where possible to not give up the dream. I think she's got not quite the same similarities, but there's Mahershala Ali's character in Luke Cage, who kind of maybe got killed off a little bit too soon, you know what I mean? It felt like
one of the criticisms that a lot of people have said of Luke Cage is he was such an incredibly...
This is a spoiler special, by the way, if no one realised coming into this.
Spoiler warning. But yeah, he was such an enthralling character, and he died like less than halfway through, which seems really premature, but you understand why, because it did serve a greater plot point.
It did, but I think then they kept the wrong villain almost. Do you know what I mean? Because he would have been, to me, the better villain in the... I know I'm not sure of the comic material in Luke Cage, so I guess if he's cast for a part that goes by the comics and he dies in that, then, you know, you're being true to the comics and the source material. But it's it's that kind of similarity for this where I was like, she's kind of just getting going. And then they obviously have to do some shocking things. And I think Elektra, you know, taking over in that way was quite bold. And I thought people didn't really like Elektra. No, I didn't see it coming either.
I thought that Elektra was going to kill the rest of them.
Yeah,
and it was just going to be Elektra and Alexandra running things. But that was a real dick move.
Yeah.
Considering every other time we'd seen them together, Alexandra was like the sort of adoptive mother, and she's very much trying to help her. You know, your past life, nobody really cared for you. That's why they left you. We're your family now, and she's trying to reintegrate her into this new family. And then she just kills her stone dead.
Yeah, stone dead as well.
Yeah, no more of the substance.
And that's, I think that would have been probably the first thing that was quite shocking about it as well, because there were obviously some fight scenes in there and some levels of violence, but I think if you go back to Daredevil, it's on another level violence-wise, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what I felt it was lacking at times, is that kind of edge. You know, the stuff with the Punisher in Series 2, that prison, you know, scene. Obviously, there was a hallway fight scene, which we were expecting. Were some great fight scenes, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. But it just didn't quite have... It didn't feel quite as bold as I thought it would be.
Basically, we'd be most happy, wouldn't we, if it was just done like Daredevil Plus. So they did Season 1 of Daredevil, Season 2, and then this was like Season 2.5.
Yeah, I mean, at times it felt a bit like that. It felt a bit like Civil War, where you've got a Captain America film that's almost an Avengers film. Do you know what I mean? It's like a 2.5. It had a feel of that. The big thing for me, and what surprised me most when I watched this series, is how much I missed Jessica Jones. Like, I honestly watched that first series, and we've never talked about it on a pod. And I really enjoyed it, and we both kind of had the odd moan about Jessica Jones and her as a, obviously her issues with her.
With getting hit on the back of the fucking head.
Well, there was that big issue, but you know, the series as a whole and her wit and her kind of style of delivery and her style of acting, I just think she's incredible.
It's faultless.
Yeah, it is. She plays a drunk so well.
You forget that Kristen Ritter, again, she's a very, you know, well-respected, certified actor.
She's got a bit of props for a Breaking Bad role, albeit she was only in it briefly, but she was very good.
Yeah, well, like you say, we never really got to cover Jessica Jones, and whenever I talk about it, I've always said that it was a bit of a disappointment, and I was a little bit let down with it, but seeing her in this made me want to slap myself forever saying that, because she was brilliant. She was very much like the connective tissue in bringing everyone together. She did.
Well, she's just the one that's a bit, she's just brash and rude and obnoxious.
She's the real,
and she's just fun, man, you know, because, and I think you get that when you've got Charlie Cox kind of pining after Elektra the whole series, you've got, you know, Iron Fist basically saying, "I'm the immortal Iron Fist," on repeat. And then you've got Luke Cage kind of, I don't know, not wanting to be there at times, it felt like, to be honest. I think he'd probably been like, "Christ, I've just got out of prison and I've been fighting all these people. Could I just have a rest?" She just felt like the one that just, I don't know, she just felt great to be on screen. And I think she had that kind of supporting cast, you know, obviously the couple of members that were from Jessica Jones. And I think there's feelings that this is kind of, you know, great to lean towards her second series, which I think everyone's going to be quite excited about now, to be honest, because she's just perfectly cast. And she, you know what, in fairness to her, and I guess she doesn't look that effective when she's fighting or running, but she found a bit of strength in this. Do you know what I mean? And I felt like they did it a lot better than they did in Jessica Jones, for instance.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think she... I don't know why. Maybe it was because the storyline for Jessica Jones was so deeply personal for her that, you know, she had a lot of, like, baggage that she had to get rid of in the form of Kilgrave, and now she's been able to move on, and now maybe they're able to develop her more as Jessica Jones the hero rather than Jessica Jones the former hero struggling with this past life. But
yeah, she's got a bit of an anti-hero touch about her. Do you know? She's reluctant.
Well, because she's always drunk, and if she's not drunk, she's on her way to it. She swears. She's horrible to everyone. I mean, these people are her friends, and she spends most of her time telling Matt that he's stupid, and he looks stupid, and he looks like an arsehole with the scarf. She's always taking the piss out of Danny because he starts talking about his chi and things like that. But at the end of the day, when the chips are down, she's one of the first ones to run into battle and throw punches, isn't she? Even though she's not got any real powers anymore, she's always there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't imagine how they'd ever try and get her to fly. Do you know what I mean? It just wouldn't work, let's be honest.
Well, I think they moved away from that, didn't they? In Jessica Jones, they showed that she could leap really far. And I think when she had a conversation with Trish, I think one point she says that she acknowledged that she used to be able to, but now she either couldn't, or she, I think it was something like, well, I haven't tried it in so long, so she's kind of afraid to. But realistically,
the alcohol probably stunts half of her development.
We don't need flying in Netflix. No. We want it for the grit and the violence and the language. We don't need the cheesy superhero powers. I'm quite content for her to just jump and run and punch people.
In her own series, I kind of don't want to involved in any of that, if possible. Do you know what I mean? I like her kind of approach where she is, and they did put that into this, where she's an investigator. Do you know what I mean? She's a very good private investigator, and she's got an eye for things, and that's her skill set. Do you know what I mean? And obviously, Charlie Cox is legal kind of side of things. They all, except Danny Rand and Luke Cage, in fairness, those two have an outside life outside of being a superhero, I guess, of some ilk. Do you know what I mean? Or being, it's just different. And I kind of love the fact that you've got her ripping Daredevil's outfit and all the kind of quick one-liners that she's got in there.
Nice ears.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, that just worked. And her relationship, you know, when she reaches over, one of my favourite parts of the whole series is when she reaches over on the underground on the subway and she grabs a can of beer out of the homeless guy's kind of bag, and they just look at her and she just doesn't give a shit. Do you know what I mean? That's her approach to things. So it's been a long week, I think.
Yeah.
She's just such a great character, and I think without her, it wouldn't work, I'd say, to be honest.
It would be a little bit flattering. It certainly would have been a lot less funny, because she was definitely in a lot of scenes, especially the really awkward things. She was very much the comic relief.
She was.
And that's what you need. She's got great timing, because you don't really go to Daredevil for comedy, and Luke's very dry. You sometimes get accidental comedy from Danny, but she's the deliberate comedy. She's like,
she is.
Just pulls no punches. Just, you look like an idiot. What are you talking about with your fucking chi? Yeah, she's
essentially you in comic form.
She's me with tits.
Yeah, it's similar.
Works for me.
I don't think you drink that much. You drink that much tea, but I don't think you drink that much alcohol.
Funny, that was very good timing, because I'm drinking tea right now.
Yeah, you see. 47 of these, you get to know what happens on the other end of a Skype call. So, I mean, generally speaking, I thought it was, there was a lot of positive to take from this. I think, like you said about the first four episodes, I felt like they were building, but they were a little bit too cautious. And then it felt like it had to catch up with itself a little bit in the final four and throw a little bit too much. Well, not too much, but get the action stakes up and get the intensity stakes up. And I just think perhaps it could have been longer is my big thing, because what have we had, 13 episodes on the other series?
All the other ones have been 13, and this one was 8.
Felt to me like maybe they didn't have enough either script or time to shoot, or, you know, something along those lines, because I'm quite surprised they didn't lengthen it to being at least 10 episodes. I felt like, and I've never felt like Daredevil's too long. I think we had this discussion once and probably came to realize it's not too much, but I think Iron Fist felt like 3 episodes too much. Maybe Luke Cage dragged a little bit in the middle. I think Jessica Jones did at times until Colgrave kind of stepped it up. And I just think maybe they they did haven't quite got the balance right yet. I think 10 episodes would have been perfect for this, because I think they tried to wrap up maybe too much too quickly.
Especially with them being longer episodes as well. I mean, an extra 2 episodes doesn't sound a lot, but that's potentially 2 hours that you can do a lot in that 2 hours. And it did feel... You always take the piss out of me for being overly positive, but this is the only one of the series where it's finished and I haven't instantly been chomping at the bit. Like, if there'd been a second season, I would have been straight all over it. Of course I would, but I would have been doing so with a little bit of, well, I don't know what to expect now, because I didn't feel as hyped as I have done. Even after Iron Fist, I was so hyped. But after this one, I actually started thinking, well... Iron Fist, I think, was a
big break coming before Iron Fist. So I think we were kind of desperate to see what had happened. Do you know what I mean? Like, we wanted more of that, you know, of Hell's Kitchen, really. And I think this has come not long after Iron Fist, and everyone was ready for it. But I think everyone was probably expecting Avengers levels of coming together of the characters, do you know what I mean? I think everyone was expecting a big, grand, and a kind of spectacle. And I don't think it kind of was that. I think you said it was a 7 out of 10. I think I would call it the same. So, I'm not, like, hypercritical of it, because there's moments of it I really loved, and there's a lot of it that makes me want to... I just want to see more Daredevil. I literally... You could make 10 series of Daredevil and I'd watch it on repeat, to be honest. But
yeah.
But
Jessica
Jones
was definitely
well.
The highlight.
Yeah, and his fighting, man, his fighting is so good.
Stuntman is on another level of ability. It's scary how good he is. And he's obviously got the hardest job, because even though Iron Fist is an incredibly skilled fighter, he doesn't do the flips and the acrobatic stuff that Daredevil does. Luke and Jessica are both really just heavy hitters and throwers and stuff.
Yeah, Luke doesn't get involved, and you could see Jessica was struggling in the martial arts in terms of her character would get beat by someone being too quick for her, do you know what I mean? When she can't use any physical strength.
And especially the same. Especially that last scene when they were fighting in the tunnel underground, you could really see that those two were struggling because they didn't have a lot of space, and they were surrounded by 3 and 4 ninjas. And that's obviously where they're used to just dealing with people who punch. They're not used to dealing with people with swords and giant axes and all, and coming at them from the ceiling and the rafters and all kinds. That's
no. There's some nice moments where you got Luke kind of protecting, because he's obviously bulletproof and those kind of elements. But when he was in a fight one-on-one with one member of the Hand, I'm not sure which one it was, who was basically getting the better of him. That was pretty interesting, because it kind of showed a vulnerability which you don't often see with Luke, you know. And it was interesting that I did think they did up the stakes with Iron Fist, Danny Rand's martial arts. I thought he was good in his own solo efforts, but he was always outclassed by Colleen. But I think he was pretty good.
She was brilliant again.
She was
absolutely brilliant. And big spoiler. Not that anyone listens. You know, when we spoke about it before we recorded, but why has her name got Misty Knight? Obviously, we saw her lose her arm. That's a massive deep cut, no pun intended, for the comics.
Yeah,
because in the comics, Colleen and Misty Knight are the daughters of the Dragon, so they're like a proper crime-fighting duo. And a picture has come out today of Misty Knight walking alongside Luke Cage with a comic book robotic arm. So that's confirmed. I mean, it was pretty much known that they were going to do it anyway, because she doesn't... I don't know whether she stops being a cop and she goes private, or she's still a cop and she's just... I think she stops being a cop, because I'm guessing when you've got a robotic arm, the police aren't going to be as keen on you being a member of the force in case something goes wrong. But she goes off with Colleen and they start kicking ass on their own. But in the comics, the arm is made by Tony Stark. And we were saying before, we don't know whether they'll actually do it. They might just name it literally once. You know, where did it come from? Oh, such and such Stark tech. Or they might just completely walk around it and just say it came from Danny Rand. because Colleen said, didn't she, when she was lying, when Misty was lying in bed, that Danny had bought the hospital, and they gave a nice little tip of the hat to it, because she said something about them being very advanced, something like that. So anyone who knew that was coming, it was a huge tip of the hat to, look, she's going to be getting a robotic arm.
She's clearly loving being in this, because whenever she's got a photo still, she posts it on Twitter almost immediately, it would seem. So yeah, it's kind of cool. So I think they could do more with her. I think she's a bit of a nagger in the series. Do you know what I mean? But I think, like you said, if she goes a bit more rogue, I think you'd see a little bit more of a different side to her, because that she's got it in her.
That would certainly play the law. It would play more into the hands of Colleen, because Colleen is obviously, with the things that
Colleen's trying to establish what she can do. Do you know what I mean? I think in life,
she just wants to help, doesn't she? She feels like she knows that she's been lied to her whole life by the hand, and she just wants to know that she can do something to make a difference. Well, her and Misty can definitely make a difference with their skills.
Yeah,
they can definitely make a difference.
Yeah, they. I don't know. You could see some kind of link up with them and Jessica Jones at some stage if they went down that route. But it's interesting. I think that those characters were great as side characters. I think obviously Rosario Dawson. I don't know, man. We can't get enough of Rosario Dawson on this pod, to be honest. I think she's just excellent in every scene she's in, as you'd expect. I don't know if you're bringing up the sex scene or not, but we probably won't.
No, just I was expecting something like that, but I wasn't expecting it within like the first 10 minutes.
No, I know. They got to business, didn't they? They really did.
Yeah, they didn't waste any time.
And I mean, let's talk about Danny. Is it, you know, I do feel for Finn a bit, because Iron Fist we talked about in depth, and I think we generally liked the series. We saw there was some pretty major flaws, and there could have been some things that were done a little bit better, but there were some things that we really enjoyed and I think we want to see built upon. But I think he's the source of most people's negativity when it comes to the Defenders as a general rule, which I think is mainly down to the writing. I think the fact that he does say, "I am the immortal Iron Fist," quite regularly.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, it's become a meme already about, I'm the immortal Iron Fist, defender of Kunlun, sworn enemy of the hand.
Yeah.
Literally, you should just get it printed on a fucking business card.
But I know, man.
I think the problem with him is, because they didn't have to deal with the mysticism in anywhere near as much depth with Daredevil. They talked about the hand a little bit, but they didn't have to go into, you know, the seven cities of heaven and dragons with molten hearts and chi and all that.
Even Madame Gao didn't have such bloody chi or powers that she suddenly sprung on this series. That was bizarre.
No, so I can see why they've struggled with it, but they need to get a grip on that now, because I was hoping that they would have sorted out the teething problems of Iron Fist by the Defenders, but you've still got the same people's problem.
Well, I think the issue is, like I said, is I don't know if it was shot either before or they had no time to do any reshoots after the reactions to Iron Fist, because it felt like the same character with no feedback from what people didn't like about that series, which is disappointing. But I think, given the fact that the second series has a new showrunner, they'll probably change the direction of the character and make him less of a whiny little bitch at times.
Well, they need
less
to,
of a, because, you know, out he of needs the four to, of them, you know, he's pretty cool. He's a cool character, and in his costume, which we want to see, and with the Iron Fist and all the rest of it, you want to see what he can become.
Well, already got the costume, because right at the end, when he's wearing that jumpsuit, that's the more modern take from the Marvel Now series. Yeah. So I think that's from like the last maybe 3 or 4 years, something like that.
Sure.
So we've kind of got that, but what we want is the scarf around his face. But the problem that they seem to have with him is, anyone who knows the characters knows that Iron Fist is incredibly powerful. Yet every time they have a fight scene, the first 3/4 of it, he's getting his ass handed to him. He's still only got the Iron Fist in one hand. He should have it in both hands by now. He should be much more in control of his powers.
Yeah, he seems to be lacking control as a rule, you know, and that's what's frustrating.
That's where my problem with it comes from. My only exposure to him is a little bit from the comics, but from cartoons. And in the cartoons, he's always the one that's leading the fight. Well, in this, it's Daredevil, then it's Luke Cage, and then it's possibly him. And it should be, you know, he should be front and center, because as he says, he's the sworn enemy of the Hand. He should be the one that's leading the troops into battle. And the Hand weren't that bothered by him. They were more scared when Daredevil came up, when it was the Devil of Hell's Kitchen's with him. Everyone's arseholes tightened up a little bit, and that's kind of the wrong way around, because at the end of the day, Daredevil is just a man. Iron Fist is the one that's got this immortal unholy power. So
I agree. They've definitely made it out like Charlie Cox is the more important of the figures. He's the lead. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's because he's more of a developed character. He's obviously more established. But he clearly seems more of a threat. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously the Iron Fist has got extreme power, but he can't ever bloody charge the thing up because he's got no control of it. So you see him in action scenes and he's fine, but he's not, I don't know. You know, Charlie Cox is Daredevil just on another level for me. And even when you see people like, I mean, Luke Cage is, I don't think we'll see more, because he's only brute strength, and I think that's it. Do you know what I mean? And that's understandable. But Jessica Jones surprised me in this, whereas Iron Fist didn't really surprise me all that. There was a couple of moments, but I thought the fight scenes were mainly centered again around Daredevil and Elektra, which was not a massive surprise.
Yeah, I think the other problem with Iron Fist was I didn't really enjoy the arc where they sort of made him the weak link.
He did become the weak.
That part of the storyline seemed kind of forced. That's where to me, that's where the writing hit its lowest point. It's as if they couldn't find a way to get these two things happening. So they go, right, we've got the Defenders have come together. We've got the Hand. We need to get them head to head. Well, why don't we have them targeting the Iron Fist, and they need him to open this
and when they tied him up and stuff, it felt a little bit, I mean, there was still some good interaction. Luke was good in those moments, but yeah, it was way too easy.
Yeah, so,
and it just didn't feel like, yeah, that would have been the point where they could probably up the ante a little bit. They could have gone on some kind of, I don't know, not that it's that star, but maybe a chase scene or something that would maybe bring it out a little bit more. Do you know what I mean? Like, it felt like the action was mainly centered around obviously the build up to that, and then that big last episode, which, let's be honest, was pretty damn cool with the lift, and with all the, you know, the dragon carcass and stuff, which was pretty awesome.
And that dragon, they never actually addressed it, but that was supposed to be Shao Lao. So that was supposed to be the dragon that Danny defeated in order to actually get the Iron Fist.
Yeah.
So that was a nice... That's probably the closest that we're ever going to see. I don't think we'll ever see Dragon
in flashbacks. They never have the budget, man. They're never going to go Game of Thrones, let's be honest.
They'd have to do a bloody 4-episode season if they ever wanted to do Dragons.
Yeah, it's a different style. It's not... I think what we wanted to see, and what I think me and you both said, is we were shocked they didn't wake up in Kunlun, really. That's what I was expecting.
Yeah, I thought that when he opened his eyes, he was going to stare upwards and see like a golden sky or something, and then he was going to look round and be like, the fuck, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore.
Yes.
And I was really surprised to see him in New York. Now, we don't know what's happened to Elektra, because it the only way they're going to explain that, I've seen two theories so far. One, that Elektra, because of the way she's been resurrected, she's got this ungodly level of power and she was able to shield him from the debris, or that the tunnel never collapsed because the tunnel was reinforced with dragon bones. Maybe the building came down on top of him, but the tunnel survived. Because if whatever it was, a 40-story building collapses on you, surely Elektra, I mean, she must be, what, about £120-130? There's no way she's stopping, you know, a big piece of debris from smacking him on the head or cracking his sternum or chopping his legs off. No. So there's got to be some kind of a semi-logical explanation, considering we're talking about a pathway to another dimension, to another plane of existence.
Yeah.
There's got to be some way. But if anyone didn't get it, that final scene when he wakes up in the what looks like a hospital, but he's actually in a convent, and when they name, they say, get Maggie. Maggie is actually his mum. And they cover it really well in one of the best Daredevil books out there, which I read in the last couple of weeks, called Born Again. And it turns out that when Matt had his accident when he was a kid, there was this mysterious woman that came to visit him while he was in bed. He didn't know who she was, but he remembered her name. He remembered her voice, and he remembered the feel of the crucifix that she wears. And years later, when he's been psychologically destroyed by the Kingpin has found his secret identity, which I'll cover as well because it's a boss story. And he's psychologically and physically destroyed him. And he ends up being found by this sister Maggie. And Matt, he recognizes the feel of the crucifix round her neck, even though it's about 20 years later or something. And he realizes, he says to her at one point, he goes, are you my mother? And that's clearly the line they're going down. So it looked
Which makes sense, because it's got to go in a new... Well, it's got to go in a different direction. You know the characters as they stand. There's only so much development they can do on people like Foggy. Do you know what I mean? It's gone as much as it can go. So do we think Fisk is the big bad still coming back into season three? Is that what we expect, or do we think we'll move?
I think so. I would be surprised after that little Easter egg there if they don't go into the Born Again storyline, because I wanted to find the scene so we could go over the dialogue, but the bit where Fisk goes to prison, he has a bit of a heated exchange with Matt, doesn't he? Not with Daredevil. And he makes some kind of a personal threat against him. And in the comics, what happens is Karen goes off the rails. She becomes heroin addict.
Oh, what are you telling me about this? I was like, okay.
It's rated as one of the darkest storylines in all of comics. She becomes a heroin addict. She becomes a prostitute, and she ends up starring in porn films against her will, because she's that into the drugs that she'll do anything to get money. And she ends up selling Daredevil's identity to some low-level drug dealer, and through a series of Chinese whispers, it gets sold onto the Kingpin. So the Kingpin starts testing Matt and Daredevil at the same time. It's kind of similar to what Bane does with Batman. Very cerebral. Yeah. He's breaking him down piece by piece. And every step of the way, he wants Matt to know that it's him that's doing this. Karen actually...
If they go that direction, and they're bold enough to, I mean, looking at Daredevil 1 and 2, they certainly don't pull any punches. The violence in those... is off the charts. Do you know what I mean? It's probably the darkest thing produced in terms of a Marvel, DC, you know, when they've had the opportunity, when it's not on a mainstream network or in film. So I think it's going to be good if they go in some form of direction. We always said her background was very untold and unexplained. Do you know what I mean? And there's a lot more to come from her. So I'm hoping they do elements of that.
There's a logical way of them doing it, because as far as they're concerned, Matt's dead. So the logical way to spin it now is that she just goes off the rails. They might not go down heroin. It could just be
she drink. Can drink, yeah, drugs.
She's spending every night in Josie's bar pounding bottles of whiskey. And a lot of it they can do. It's, you know, all they've got to do is show her leaving with some strange fellow when she's arsehole, and she wakes up the next day. She doesn't know where the hell she is or what she's been doing. And they've covered it right there. And then basically she just goes so off the rails because it's just because they split up. I couldn't see them ever going the whole way. But if they do that half as well, then it's a brilliant arc for a character that, like you say, we said there's something about her. The way she handled the gun and shot that fella, the Kingpin's assistant.
Yeah.
She was too comfortable with that gun. She was too... okay with the fact that she just murdered someone in cold blood. This could be a way now of unleashing her darkness. you know, she's done a really good job over the last few years of covering it up, but now Matt's dead, all the darkness comes out, she can't fight it anymore. Because in the comics, she's besotted with Matt, and I think it's their breakup that tips her over the edge. And even though she screws him over in the worst way, she still goes back to Hell's Kitchen and she still goes back to Matt and confesses what she did, because she thinks that he'll help her. And he does. He still ends up helping her because he's always there for her. So yeah, it would be a fascinating way of doing it. And it looks like in the meantime, Danny has taken over informally the responsibility of being the guardian of Hell's Kitchen. Because you see that great scene where he's on the rooftop, and it looks, he's adopted like a daredevil type pose. He's crouching and he's watching, but then he obviously lights up the fist.
Yeah.
So and then there's clearly in Luke Cage season two, there's clearly going to be a lot more of Jessica in there, because they've now patched up, and you know, she seems like she's maybe willing to accept that there's room for one or two more people in her life rather than just Trish and that guy that works for her. The one yeah. that she acts like she hates, but really she actually kind of, you know, appreciates him. I can't remember his name. So they've already said now, in the same way that Avengers Assemble was the end of phase one, this is the end of phase one of Marvel Netflix. Now we go into phase two, and now they're supposed to go into overdrive. So the fight scenes are supposed to get bigger and better and bloodier. The characters are supposed to get grittier. They need to dial up the villains across the whole. If you count them all as one entity, because they are, aren't they? Yeah. The shared universe. They need collectively better villains. And the logical thing to do for me is set the Kingpin at the top of it, and then everything else that happens in all of the other series permeates from him.
Yeah,
because you've got to drill down into the Kingpin. He's one of Marvel's most iconic villains.
Well, he's Spider-Man villain, wasn't he? Or had connections with him?
He's had a lot of connections with Spider-Man. I think he probably would be considered a Spider-Man villain first and foremost, because Daredevil's rogues gallery is actually really shit. Daredevil has got some of the... He's got probably my least favourite villain ever, which is Stiltman. Where he's literally, there's this guy and all these...
Mate, that sounds like Condiment King or something. That's terrible.
Yeah.
That's like a bad Gotham villain. You know, series one, when they just pulled out those guys, like the Balloon Man. It's just, oh God, whatever he was called. It feels like sometimes they just... The writers can write a great hero, but they don't always know how to write a great villain, to be honest. So, I still think there's scope, but I think we've all had enough of the Hand, let's be honest.
Yeah, the Hand was, out of all the villains he could have done, I thought that was one of the weirdest ones to pick, because it's such, to start going into a cult and resurrection and ties that go back hundreds and thousands of years and the black sky, and it was so weird to do that. You know, it would have made more sense for them to do, right, phase one is the Kingpin. And then gradually over the course of those 5-6 seasons, bring the Hand in the background.
Yeah.
Because then they could have done it a little bit more gradually. But it's done now. I mean, the major thing is the villains didn't compromise the quality of the show that much. It wasn't the case of, sucked.
No, I don't think they did. I just think their interaction with each other wasn't great. I liked the Japanese guy who was he carving a bear on the table? He was pretty cool. He was pretty badass.
Another one you mean.
You know what I mean? He was a hunter or whatever they would define it as. He was pretty cool.
The other members of the Hand, I mean, Bakuto was brilliant. He was really good.
In this series, I mean, he's a good fighter. But
overall,
the
only thing I didn't like about him in this...
I don't like his kind of style.
They didn't spend 1 second talking about his resurrection, because he was dead. And we were told that they...
Oh, they did. They briefly said about his... I think it was mentioned, like, as a passing comment. Do you know what I mean? But it was just like, really? Do you know what I mean? That's it.
But they had no more of the compound left.
Yeah.
Because they used all of it on Elektra. So how the hell was he brought... He must have been brought back instantly. So the time
was
a little bit off. Because that means that the events of Iron Fist... must, where he died, must have been like pretty much parallel with season two of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Because she was, we didn't see the compound being used on her, but she was placed into that giant casket or the urn, wasn't she? And then we got an extended version of that scene where they then took that and they covered her in that black tar, which then ended up almost looking like blood when she came out of it.
Yeah.
But he was good. The one thing I really liked about Madame Gao was she seemed all powerful whenever we've seen her, but she's kind of a little bitch. She was really subservient, wasn't she? Whenever Alexandra was there, she's kissing her ass and calling her ice cream.
She was, it was weird. And then obviously she suddenly got these kind of force powers, and I just don't think she's ever had those, has she? Have we never seen her do anything other than kind of hobble around?
I think we, oh God, in the,
I it think was, it felt strange anyway. Do you know what I mean?
It was like Yoda, wasn't it, from the Star Wars prequels, where all of a sudden he can't walk, but he can do a fucking triple backflip with a half pipe.
She's got a bit of a Yoda vibe.
She has, actually, because she's really small and she walks with a cane.
Yeah, I think that's it.
That's but basically small people with canes give off Yoda vibes.
Yeah, like Bilbo Baggins at the end of Lord of the Rings. Yeah, that's a strange reference to go to, but I'm just thinking of small people with canes. I don't have many to reference. There's not a lot in my, you know, gags when he's old. I don't know if I've got any more. Yeah, he'll have a cane. He'll have a cane. It'll be Anfield Index printed. Do you know what I mean? It'll be full logoed.
Yeah.
But he's definitely going to have one. Have we got anything else to cover on Defenders? Are we actually going to beat an hour or the clock for once ever? Or are we pretty satisfied? I think from my perspective, you know, I think like you, I felt like I need a little bit more. I have just read that the reason it wasn't longer is, like we predicted, it was conflict schedules because of Jessica Jones Series 2 and Luke Cage Series 2 needed to start production. Now, to me, what's your priority? Do you know what I mean? Like, is it not going to be Defenders? Because Defenders should be the culmination of all those four initial series. Obviously, Daredevil's got two series, but that's a bit of a disappointment. To me, I thought it would be the spectacle, and I liked it. I just think we've had better, and I think what everyone expected is it would be the best series, or hoped anyway.
Well, I hoped it would. I really hoped that it was going to be the culmination of the previous 2 years, but yeah,
it feels like they've lost a little bit of momentum.
That's a fair way of looking at it. Like I said, the only way I can really summarize it is I called it a 7 out of 10, which seems fair. And I just felt when it finished, I was a little bit like unfinished business. It felt like they needed just one more episode or something to just explain a few things. And
I think they needed a couple. The big issue for me with it is it's not like an Arrow or a Flash that comes back every year. We're probably going to be talking Defenders Series 2 in 2 years' time.
It's going to be at least 2, maybe 3, because we've got Punisher's end of this year. I think they did say from now on they're going to be doing 3 seasons a year.
So which makes sense as to why they're struggling for scheduling. But let's be honest, we're not getting this yearly. It should have been a bigger event for me. Do you know what I mean? It should have been a bigger spectacle.
I think it's going to be something like March. So one round Easter, one round the summer, and then one round October, November.
Yeah. I mean, look, we've always said everyone should watch all of these, but it does surprise me that, you know, it's not got more of a standalone element to it. I think you really needed to know what the hell was going on in all these other series.
You certainly needed to know anything that related to the Hand. You needed to at least have seen Daredevil and Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the Hand stuff and all the mystical Kun Lun stuff had... you know, you had no background to touch on with it.
No, exactly. And it did surprise me somewhat. But like I said, the momentum feels like it's been taken out of their sails somewhat, because I think they were riding high after Daredevil Series 2. It was like their peak point because Jessica Jones did really well. And obviously Daredevil Season 1. And then the buzz about the Punisher and Luke Cage. And we like Luke Cage. I mean, at times I loved Luke Cage. I thought it had more potential, and I thought the villain was a bit of a letdown in the end. But stylistically, we said it was ace. Do you know what I mean? Because it had the kind of real soul and real vibe of Harlem, and I thought they were quite bold with the way they produced it, and the music and the club and the style. It was just great, great in those elements. And I think Iron Fist has just slowly kind of got into everyone's mindset a little bit and just brought things down a peg or two. And I think everyone expected Defenders to just have that adrenaline hit and kick things on again. And I just don't think it quite has. I've no doubt they will produce great series to come. I just, you know, I think everyone just expected a little bit more and is a little bit, I think just a little bit disappointed. Not majorly, like I said, you know, it's a good series. It's a solid series, but I think everyone expected it. It's, you know, we hold that bar really high, especially me and you, I think. I said Daredevil's. Daredevil, to me, is one of the best produced TV shows of the last few years. Do you know what I mean? Last 10 years, I'd say. And people will go, well, what about this? What about that? And everyone will always throw the fucking Sopranos at you. And, you know, I like Breaking Bad a lot, and it's great, and there's a lot of great things. It's not Game of Thrones, don't get me wrong, but Daredevil is one of the finest produced TV shows in the last few years, because it's bold and it's different, and they've got the casting just spot on.
And I just think it stands on its own 2 feet as a TV show rather than just a comic TV show.
Yeah, it really does, man. It really does. And I think Jessica Jones has got scope as well. And I think if you look at who their rival, you know, Flash and Arrow and the other stuff that's on the networks, then I think they are different and they do stand out.
They're different, but they definitely hold their own. I mean, in terms of reviews, all the Netflix shows get
really popular.
Very, very favourable reviews, and lots of people that don't like comic stuff.
I know people that watch Jessica Jones who remotely know interest in comics, and Jessica Jones really ticks a lot of people's boxes.
Yeah.
Because it's not...
Well, she's probably the least comic-y out of the bunch of them, because you don't see comic characters that swear, that sleep till lunchtime, that drink all the time in the absence of any kind of food. So she's not just the anti-hero, she's the anti-comic character as well.
She is, really. Yeah, she is.
So in terms of going forward, we know that, as I've said, we know that Misty Knight's got her robotic arm. That's a good deep cut from the comics. We know Punisher is coming up. That's out in the next couple of months.
And it looks like
his military time, so that might sort of go...
Just go really dark, really violent, really brutal, and I'll love every second of it.
It looks like it's going to be quite violent, because they've got a lot of explaining as to how he comes back as scarred as he is.
Well, I feel a bit cheated, to be honest, man. I feel like I need the violence after watching Defenders. I feel like I need that kind of hit of raw brutality that only kind of Daredevil and Punisher produce, you know. So I think it's going to be fucking ace, to be honest.
We know that Kilgrave's coming back in some way.
Yeah, I hope it's a flashback of somewhat.
Because he shot himself in the head.
Yeah, and obviously, all as powerful as he is, I don't want it. I really don't want it. I just think they need to move on, and I think. Yeah, I think it'll be flashbacks. It leads you to believe that, because obviously they've got a big history and that's a big part of Jessica Jones, so we'll see.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, we're a bit far ahead for Luke and I'm just to see where they're going to go, and I'm not as excited about those anyway.
Yeah.
So, not yet. So
in keeping with the recent thing that Joey and I have been doing, if anyone does have any reading material that they'd like recommendations on,
yeah,
I can give a couple. I'm just looking at my shelf now. The Immortal Iron Fist run from, I think it was like the mid-2000s. The Immortal Iron Fist, that's very, very well regarded. Where I can give people advice on is Daredevil, because I've been reading a lot of it recently. Born Again, which is the one I mentioned before. Daredevil Guardian Angel, which is Kevin Smith, so you know it's going
to
be good.
God, I'm going to have to get my hands on that.
And then an older one, which is from Frank Miller, Daredevil The Man Without Fear, from Frank Miller's original.
Frank Miller as well. Yeah. Oh, man. So, no wonder people hold it in such regard, because I've only touched on Daredevil, and no wonder people always hoped they'd produce so much out of it, because the material is really good.
Well, this Frank Miller run, just looking in it, is... 93-94. So that's a really famous... I put a picture up of it on my Instagram. There's a brilliant scene where there's a guy shoots a bullet at Matt, and he takes his cane and he smacks the bullet midair. And yeah. It fires right back at the guy and catches him right between the eyes. And you know what Frank Miller's artwork's like. It's really graphic. It's really adult looking. You know, it's not big bloody kawaii eyes and stuff like that and Japanese no. style. It's really gritty looking. So those three books are worth anyone's time. And I paid about 15 quid for the three of them, thanks to Amazon Marketplace.
Oh, so nice.
Easily affordable and definitely recommended. So, yeah, if anyone's got any of their own feedback that you'd like to give, your thoughts on the show, your predictions going forward or anything you'd like to see, then please
do that. Yeah, give us some recommendations, actually. We're getting to the point where we've got a lot of – there's loads of stuff we can always cover, and I need to start, you know, reading some more material when I can, you know, and it's always hard. I know Stu always finds the time, but he doesn't have to – very, very demanding children to deal with.
No, I've just got
as much
one.
As I love them. You've got one. But you know what I mean. It's hard to always find the time, but we really do love this podcast, and we've had some great guests on lately, and we kind of want to maybe increase that. There's some other people we want to bring into the fold at times, maybe, and just some cover some new stuff. Ragnarok is coming on the horizon. Do you know what I mean? There's some more buzz around it. More buzz around Black Panther and stuff for next year, but it's the kind of off season, isn't it, until the TV series kick back in.
Yeah,
watching Arrow and Flash will be back soon enough. Walking Dead's probably back in October, which hopefully will kick its ass into gear, and yeah, so we're just kind of we're poised and ready anyway, let's put it that way.
We are
always poised and ready. We sound extremely tired. Thanks for joining us, though. We do genuinely appreciate it. As I said, any kind of plugs and retweets and everything, all the focus, we really do appreciate it. And yeah, tune in. We'll be back next couple of weeks, I'd hope. So yeah, we'll speak to you then. Take care. Thanks.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.